Unit 23, Discipline, page number 13, Structure, 23.0, Objectives, 23.1, Introduction, 23.2, Causes for Disciplinary Action, 23.3, Disciplines and Appeal Rules in India, Penalties Procedure for Imposing Penalties, A. Communication of Charge, B. Reply to Charges, C. Appointment of an Inquiry Board, D. Recording of Evidence, E. Consultation with the Commission. Section 23.3.1, Suspension During Disciplinary Proceedings. A. Right of Appeal. B. Cases where there is no right of appeal. C. Consideration of appeal by appellate authority. D. Form and procedure for submission of appeals. Section 23.3.2, Revision. 23.3.3, Memorials. 23.4, Types of Disciplinary Action. 23.5, Mode of Taking Disciplinary Action. 23.6, The Position in India. 23.7, Safeguards versus Protectionism. 23.8, Let us sum up. 23.9, Keywords. 23.10, Some Useful Books. Page number 14, Section 23.0, Objectives. The objective of this unit is to explain the significance of discipline. After going through this unit, you should be able to 1. Know the punishment meted out to government employees for lapse of duty. 2. Causes for disciplinary action. 3. Formal and informal disciplinary action. 4. Authority to take disciplinary actions. 5. Power to hear appeal. 6. Authority to withhold an appeal. Section 23.1, Introduction. Discipline in service is very essential for efficiency of smooth working of organization. No organization is so perfect, no executive so ingenious, no personal system so infallible that measures of correction and punishment can be completely avoided. The purpose of this chapter is to lay down a few points of definition, give a brief assessment of practices and outline a few principles and precautions. Section 23.2, Causes for Disciplinary Action. Professor L.D. White lists the causes or occasions for disciplinary action against public servants under the following heads. 1. Inattention to duty, tardiness, laziness, carelessness, breakage or loss of property, etc. 2. Inefficiency. 3. Insubordination, violation of law or regulation, including the rules against political activity. 4. Intoxication. 5. Immorality. 6. Lack of integrity, including violation of a recognized code of ethics, failure to pay debts, soliciting or accepting a bribe, or deliberately neglecting to enforce the law. In short, conduct of a civil servant must not be unbecoming of an officer. Page number 15. Penalties for violation of rules, for misperformance or for non-performance vary widely in severity. The more useful forms of disciplinary action are warning or reprimand, reassignment, suspension without pay, demotion and dismissal. The least severe punishment, warning or reprimand, often proves sufficient to correct a situation. Proper handling with due regard for a person's self-esteem, that is, directing the charge against a specific behavior, not the whole man, can send an employee back to his work with a new perspective and a new feeling of loyalty towards the service. The personal contact occasioned by an informal oral reprimand presents an opportunity for constructive counsel that the good supervisor does not overlook. Although not always evident as disciplinary punishment, reassignment to other duties may well be induced by bad performance. Since reassignment is more likely to be used as a developmental technique, it is well that when it is used for disciplinary purposes, its intent is made clear to the individual involved. Banishment to less desirable duties or a less desirable location is sometimes resorted to in the case of police patrolmen, field workers of various kinds, or others who can be moved about without disruption to the services concerned. Generally, it is a dubious practice at best, for even though it may be effective on occasion, it hardly seems to be a constructive way to make placements. Assignments should be based on fitness, not unsuitability. Section 23.3, Disciplines and Appeal Rules in India, Penalties and Procedure for Imposing Penalties. Penalties. The following penalties may, for good and sufficient reasons and as hereafter provided, be imposed on a member of the service, namely 1. Censure. 2. Withholding of increments or promotion. 3. Reduction in rank, including reduction to a lower post or to a lower state in a same scale. 4. Recovery from pay of the whole or part of any pecuniary loss caused to the government by negligence or breach of orders. 5. Compulsory retirement on proportionate pension. 6. Removal from the service which shall not disqualify for future employment. 7. Dismissal from the service which shall ordinarily disqualify for future employment. the penalty of dismissal, removal or compulsory retirement shall not be imposed on a member of the service except by an order of the central government. Page number 16. Procedure for imposing penalties. A. Communication of charge. 1. No order shall be passed imposing any penalty on a member of the service unless he has been informed in writing of grounds on which it is proposed to take action and has been accorded an adequate opportunity of defending himself. 2. The grounds on which it is proposed to take action shall be reduced to the form of a definite charge or charges which shall be communicated to the member of the service charged together with a statement of the allegation on which each charge is based and of any other circumstance which it is proposed to take into consideration in passing orders on the case. B. Reply to charges. 1. The member of the service shall be required to put in a written statement of his defence and to state whether he desires to be heard in person. 2. The member of the service concerned may request for an access to official records for the purpose of preparing his written statement. The government may refuse him such access if, in its opinion, such records are not strictly relevant to the case or it is not desirable in the public interest to allow such access. 3. After the written statement is received from the member of the service, or if no such written statement is received within the time allowed, government may, if it considers it necessary, appoint a board of inquiry or an inquiry officer to inquire into the charges framed against the member of the services. If the government does not consider it necessary to appoint a board of inquiry or an inquiry officer, the government shall inquire into the charges in such a manner as it deems fit. Page number 17. Point number C. Appointment of an inquiry board. 1. If the member of the service desires to be heard in person, he shall be heard. If he desires that an oral inquiry be held, or if the government so directs, an oral inquiry shall be held by the board of inquiry or the inquiry officer, as the case may be. At such inquiry, evidence shall be heard as to such of the allegations are not admitted, and the member of the service charge shall be entitled to cross-examine the witness to give evidence in person, to have such witnesses called as he may wish. Provided that the board of inquiry or the inquiry officer, as the case may be, may, for reasons to be recorded in writing, refuse to call a witness. 2. Where a board of inquiry is appointed, it shall consist of not less than 2 senior officers, provided that at least 1 member of such board shall be an officer of the service to which the member of the service belongs. D. Recording of evidence. 1. The proceedings conducted against a member of the service shall contain a sufficient record of the evidence and a report setting out the findings and the grounds on which they are based, but shall not contain any recommendation relating to the penalty to be imposed unless the government has specifically called for such recommendation. 2. After the inquiry against a member of the service has been completed and after the punishing authority has arrived at any provisional conclusion in regard to the penalty to be imposed, if the penalty proposed is dismissal, removal, compulsory retirement or reduction in rank, the member of the service charge shall be applied with a copy of the report of inquiry and be given a further opportunity to show cause why the proposed penalty should not be imposed on him. E. Consultation with the commission. No order imposing on a member of the service any penalty shall be passed by the government except after consultation with the commission, provided that in cases where there is a difference of opinion between a state government and the commission, the matter be referred to the central government, whose decision thereon shall be final. Page number 18. Check your progress 1. Question number 1. Examine the causes for disciplinary action. Answer. See section 23.2. Question number 2. Discuss discipline and appeal rules in India. Answer. See section 23.3. Section 23.3.1. Suspension during disciplinary proceedings. 1. If having regard to the nature of the charges and the circumstances in any case, the government which initiates any disciplinary proceeding is satisfied that it is necessary or desirable to place under suspension the member of the service against whom such proceedings are started, that government may, A. If the member of the service is serving under it, pass an order placing him under suspension. B. If the member of the service is serving under another government, request that government to place him under suspension pending the conclusion of the inquiry and the passing of the final order in the case. 2. A member of the service who is detained in official custody, whether on a criminal charge or otherwise, for a period longer by 48 hours shall be deemed to have been suspended by government concerned under this rule. 3. A member of the service against whom a criminal charge is pending may, at the discretion of government under which he is serving, be placed under suspension until the termination of the proceedings if the charge is connected with his position as a government servant or is likely to embarrass him in the discharge of his duties or involves moral turpitude. Page number 19. A. Right of appeal. Every member of the service shall be entitled to appeal to the central government against an order of punishment passed by a state government which 1. Alters to his disadvantage his conditions of service, pay, allowances or pension as regulated by the rules applicable to him, or 2. Interprets to his disadvantage the provisions on any rules whereby his conditions of service, pay, allowance or pension are regulated. 3. Has the effect of superseding him in promotion from the junior to the senior scale, or 4. Has the effect of stopping him at the efficiency bar. B. Cases where there is no right of appeal. 1. A member of the service shall have no right of appeal against an order passed by the central government. 2. No appeal shall lie against an order of a competent authority withholding an appeal under Rule 14. 3. Nothing in Sub-Rule 1 or Sub-Rule 2 shall be deemed to affect or abridge the right of a member of the service to submit a memorial to the President under and in accordance with the provisions of Rule 20. C. Considerations of appeal by appellate authority. 1. In the case of an appeal against an order imposing any penalty, the central government shall consider whether the facts on which the order was based have been established, or whether the facts established offer scientific ground for taking action, or whether the penalty is excessive, adequate or inadequate, and after such consideration, in consultation with the commission, pass such order as it thinks proper. 2. After considering the facts, the central government shall pass such order as appears to it just and equitable, having regard to all the circumstances of the case. 3. Every order passed by the central government shall be final, and the state government concerned shall forthwith give effect to such order. Page number 20. Point number D. Form and procedure for submission of appeals. 1. Every member of the service preferring an appeal shall do so separately and in his own name. 2. Every appeal preferred under these rules shall be addressed to the Secretary to the Government of India in the Ministry of Home Affairs, and shall A. contain any material statements and arguments relied on by the appellant. B. contain no disrespectful or improper language. C. be complete in itself. 3. Every such appeal shall be submitted through the head of the office under whom the appellant is for the time being serving, and through the government from whose order the appeal is preferred. Section 23.3.2. Revision. The central government or the state government concerned, as the case may be, may, to its own motion or otherwise, review and revise any order which has been passed by it in the exercise of any of the powers conferred on it by any of these rules within a period of 6 months from the date of the order passed in appeal, if an appeal has been preferred, and where no such appeal has been preferred, within 1 year of the original order which gives the cause of action. Provided that where it is proposed to enhance the penalty imposed by any such order, the member of the service shall be given an opportunity of showing cause against the proposed enhancement. Provided further that where the central government or the state government concerned pass the original order, as the case may be, after consultation with the commission, it shall not be revised except after consultation with the commission. Page number 21, section 23.3.3, Memorials. 1. A member of the service shall be entitled to submit a memorial to the President against any order of the central government or the state government by which he is aggrieved within a period of 3 years from the passing of such order. 2. Every memorial submitted under these rules shall A. contain all material statements and arguments relied by the memorialist. B. be complete in itself. And C. end with a specific prayer. 3. If the memorial is against the order of a state government, it should be submitted through the state government concerned, and if the memorial is against the order of the central government, it shall be submitted through the ministry or the appropriate authority in the central government under whom the member of the service is for the time being serving. A memorial forward shall be accompanied with an expression of the opinion thereon, A. of the state government concerned, B. of the ministry or the appropriate authority in the central government under whom the member of the service is for the time being serving, C. of both the state government concerned and the central government, as the case may be. 4. The authority against whose orders a memorial is submitted under this rule shall give effect to any order passed thereon by the President, according to 15th Amendment of the Constitution, 1963. Article 311 would now read, in quotes, "Now such a person as aforesaid, government servant, shall be dismissed or removed or reduced in rank except after an inquiry in which he has been informed of the charges against him and given a reasonable opportunity of being heard in respect of those charges, and where it is proposed after such inquiry to impose on him any such penalty until he has been given a reasonable opportunity of making representation on the penalty proposed, but only on the basis of the evidence adduced during such inquiry." Close quotes. Page number 22. The Committee on Prevention of Corruption, Santhanam Committee, 1964, which examined critically these conduct rules, have pointed out in their report that the following lacunae exist in them. 1. There was no rule which cast a specific responsibility or duty on superior officers to keep a watchful eye on integrity of other government servants working under them. 2. No rule made it clear that every government servant is responsible for his actions except when he acts under the directions of his superior official. 3. There was no clear specification of the conduct expected of a government servant in the event of conflict between public duty and his private interest, though some of the points were implied but left unsaid. 4. The rules relating to raising of subscriptions, acceptance of gifts, engaging in speculation, private trade or employment resulted in harassment and pinpricks in some respect and were inadequate in certain other respects. 5. The rules relating to submission of property returns was hopelessly out of date. Annual immovable property returns serve no useful purpose when the tendency in modern times is to hold assets otherwise than as immovable property. The Central Civil Services conduct rules have been revised accordingly in the light of the recommendations of the Santhanam Committee, and the revised rules have been issued on 30th November 1964. The main new provision made in the 1964 rules, not covered by the previous rules, are as follows. 1. Every government servant holding a supervisory post shall take all possible steps to ensure the integrity and devotion to duty of all government servants for the time being under his control and authority. 2. No government servant shall use his position or influence, directly or indirectly, to secure employment for any member of his family in any private undertaking.
Page 23.
Point number 3. No government servant shall, in the discharge of his official duties, deal with any matter or give or sanction any contract to any undertaking or any other person, if any member of his family is employed ill that undertaking or under that person, or if he or any member of his family is interested in such matter or contract in any other manner, and the government staff shall refer every such matter or contract to his official superior, and the matter of contract shall thereafter be disposed of according to the instructions of the authority to whom the reference is made. 4. No government servant shall engage himself or participate in any demonstration which is prejudicial to the interests of the sovereignty and integrity of India, the security of the state, public order, decency or morality, or which involves contempt of court, defamation or incitement to an offence. 5. No government servant shall join or continue to be a member of an association, the object or activities of which are prejudicial to the interests of the sovereignty and integrity of India or public order or morality. Check your progress to question number 1. Explain the procedures of disciplinary action during suspension. Answer: see section 23.3.1, first para. Question number 2. What is memorials? How is it used? Answer: see section 23.3.3. Page number 24, section 23.4, types of disciplinary action. One of the most common forms of punishment is suspension without pay. In many jurisdictions, this is the most extreme penalty that can be imposed by an operating officer without the possibility of reversal by a higher authority. Since an indefinite suspension might be tantamount to dismissal, it is customary to limit the period for which an employee may be suspended. Commonly, 30 days is the maximum, although longer periods are by no means unknown. Use of this device is likely of doubtful practicality if the objective is to improve performance. Loss of salary for even a couple of weeks can be a serious financial blow to a civil servant's family, in effect amounting to a fine. How such a measure might rectify any wrongdoing is seldom clear. If a lengthy suspension is intended as a means of easing an offender out of the service, outright dismissal would be more forthright and honest. The main utility for suspension is in cases where some unfortunate incident of misconduct on the job requires temporary removal of the employee from the work environment, or where doubt about guilt in some instance necessitates a period of investigation. In such cases, the quicker the issue is resolved, the better. A more severe penalty than suspension, although sometimes more rational in terms of making the best use of employee skills, is demotion to a position of lower rank or grade. Carrying a more continuing stigma, demotion must be used with caution, as in the case of lateral reassignment, it can be justified only when the new assignment gives promise of making more effective utilization of the individual's capacity and aptitude than the previous one. If it is intended simply as punishment for some breach of duty, either reprimand or dismissal would be more appropriate, depending on the seriousness of the offense. Dismissal or removal from the service is the most extreme disciplinary action, but second to reprimands, probably the most common. Many times it is the most humane action if the reasons are serious, for it permits the employee to make a completely new start elsewhere, which should not be a remote possibility in a full employment economy. It is nevertheless a drastic action and an awkward and often embarrassing one to consummate. In some instances, as in the case of certain criminal or security offences, the dismissed person may be barred from future re-employment anywhere within the governmental entity that fired him, either for some specified period or permanently. Dismissal or removal is the one penalty that requires more extended comment. Page number 25. Disciplinary actions are of two types, formal and informal. Formal disciplinary action follows where the offence is serious and can be legally established. The Indian Civil Service rules enumerate the following forms of it. 1. Censure. 2. Withholding of increments or promotion, including stoppage at the efficiency bar. 3. Reduction to a low post or time scale, or to a lower stage in a time scale. 4. Recovery from pay of the whole or part of any pecuniary loss caused to government by negligence or breach of orders. 5. Suspension. 6. Removal from service which does not disqualify for future employment. 7. Dismissal from service which ordinarily disqualifies from future employment. In very serious cases of offence, even judicial proceedings against the offender may also be launched. Section 23.5. Mode of taking disciplinary action. Like the power to promote, the power to take disciplinary action also should be vested in the head of the department, because he is the person who is responsible for the discipline and efficiency of his department. Some people advocate that the power of disciplinary action should vest in an independent outside agency like the Public Service Commission. As for example, in Australia, any employee against whom an action has been taken by the departmental head may make an appeal to the Commonwealth Conciliation and Arbitration Tribunal. In the state of Chicago, dismissal can be ordered by a trial board consisting of some members of the Civil Service Commission. This is advocated in the interest of impartiality and fairness to the employee, the argument being that since the departmental authorities are accusers, they should not also be judges. Page number 26. But, in the opinion of experienced administrators, an outside agency should not be brought in to sit in judgment on the action taken by the disciplinary authorities, because, firstly, it undermines the authority of the head of the department, and secondly, outside authorities are often swayed by considerations of abstract justice rather than due appreciation of the logic of administration and management. In Britain, the Tomlin Commission expressed itself strongly against the proposal to create a central board to hear appeals against disciplinary actions. In India, the Central Pay Commission took the same view. In quotes, "We do not think," it said, "that it will be desirable or practicable in public interest to insist on the intervention of an outside body in disciplinary matters." Close quotes. All this, however, does not mean that consideration of fairness and justice should be lost sight of in taking a disciplinary action against an employee. On the contrary, suitable machinery and procedure should be provided so as to eliminate every possibility of personal prejudices. Usually, following provisions are made either in the Constitution or the statute to check the misuse of power to take disciplinary action. A. No employee shall be demoted or dismissed by an officer below in rank to one who has appointed him. B. No employee shall be punished except for a cause specified in some statute or departmental regulation. C. No employee shall be punished unless he has been given reasonable opportunity to defend his case. D. The employee shall be informed of the charge leveled against him. E. Where a board of inquiry is appointed, it shall consist of not less than 2 senior officers, provided that at least one member of such board shall be an officer of the service to which the employee belongs. F. After the inquiry against an employee has been completed and after the punishing authority has arrived at any provisional conclusion in regard to the penalty to be imposed, if the penalty proposed is dismissal, removal, reduction in rank or compulsory retirement, the employee charged shall be supplied with a copy of the report of inquiry and be given a further opportunity to show cause why the proposed penalty should not be imposed on him. Page number 27, section 23.6, the position in India. So far as India is concerned, Article 311 of the Constitution provides that 1. No person of the civil service shall be dismissed or removed by an authority subordinate to that by which he was appointed. 2. No such person shall be dismissed, removed or reduced in rank until he has been given a reasonable opportunity of showing cause against the action proposed to be taken in regard to him, provided that this clause shall not apply A. Where a person is dismissed or removed or reduced in rank on the ground of conduct which has led to his conviction on a criminal charge, B. Where an authority empowered to dismiss or remove a person or to reduce him in rank is satisfied that for some reason to be recorded by that authority in writing, it is not reasonably practicable to give to that person an opportunity of showing cause, or C. Where the president or governor, as the case may be, is satisfied that in the interest of the security of the state, it is not expedient to give to that person such an opportunity, the clause of reasonable opportunity of showing cause has been so interpreted by the law courts that the employee charged has the right to show cause twice before the order of dismissal, etc. is passed. First, when the charges are being inquired into, and second, when the inquiry has been over and the question of proper punishment is being considered. Thus, the successive steps of the procedure of disciplinary action are 1. Calling for an explanation from the employee to be subjected to disciplinary action. 2. If the explanation is not forthcoming or is unsatisfactory, framing of charges. 3. Suspension of the employee if his remaining in the service is likely to prejudice the evidence against him. 4. Hearing of the charges and giving opportunity to the employee to defend himself. 5. Findings and report. 6. Giving another opportunity to the employee to defend himself against the proposed punishment. 7. Punishment order or exoneration. And 8. Appeal if any. Page number 28. As regards the power to hear appeal, an employee appointed by the president has no right to appeal from an order passed by the president himself. A member of the All India Service may appeal from the order of a state government to the president. A member appointed by the president may appeal to him if the order has been passed by an authority subordinate to the president. A member of state service may appeal to the governor from an order passed by the state government. All employees of lower grade services may appeal to the authority which made the rule to which the order under appeal relates. Appeals can be preferred only if 1. It is permissible under rules. 2. It is not defective in form and is preferred through proper channel. 3. It is preferred within 6 months after the date of communication of the order appealed against. 4. It is not a repetition of a previous appeal to the same authority. 5. It is addressed to an authority to which appeal lies under the rules. No appeal lies against the withholding of an appeal by a competent authority. Thus, in connection with appeals in India, no outside authority intervenes at any stage. The Constitution no doubt provides for consultation with the Union or the State Public Service Commission, as the case may be, on all disciplinary matters affecting a person serving the Government of India or of a state in a civil capacity. But such consultation is limited only to those cases where the President or the Governor passes disciplinary order. The staff made complaints before the Central Pay Commission that the right of appeal is not of much value because higher officers to whom appeals are made are of the same mentality and tools of the same machinery and generally support the decisions of the subordinates. They suggested the association of an outside authority with the hearing of appeals. The commission, however, rejected the proposal. Page number 29. A second complaint was against the provision which authorizes officers to withhold appeals in cases where no appeal lies. It was said that an officer who awarded the punishment would never like his decision to be upset and would therefore withhold appeals in most cases. While recognizing that there must be a limit to appeal somewhere, the commission recommended that person dismissed from service should, where their appeal has been withheld, be permitted to petition the higher authorities for a review of their case. Finally, it can also be noted that an appeal to the courts of law against wrongful removal or dismissal can always be made, but only after all the remedies available to the employee under the service rules have been tried and exhausted by him. It may further be stated that an employee can be deprived of the right to make appeal in the following cases. A. Where a person has been removed or reduced in rank on the ground of conduct which has led to his conviction on a criminal charge, example for embezzlement. B. Where an authority empowered to remove him or reduce him in rank is satisfied that for some reason to be recorded by that authority in writing, it is not reasonably practicable to give that person an opportunity of showing cause. And C. Where the president or the governor, as the case may be, is satisfied that in the interest of the security of the state, it is not expedient to give the person such an opportunity. The Administrative Reforms Commission recommended the setting up of civil service tribunals to act as final appellate authorities regarding orders inflicting the major punishments of dismissal, removal from service and reduction in rank. Besides giving appropriate and prompt justice to the aggrieved employees, these tribunals can prove helpful in lightening the burden of courts of law, which are now being frequently moved in writ petitions and as such have crowded docket. Page number 30, section 23.7, safeguards versus protectionism. We have already observed that problems of discipline, removal and checks on management action are not peculiar to the public service. The minimum requirement of disciplinary action is that discipline and dismissal must be for cause. No fair-minded person would deny the face validity of such a safeguard. Every man is entitled to fair and reasonable treatment. Formal and detailed statement of the principle, however, opens the door to a chain of interpretations and thereby results in a significant shift in the employer-employee relationship. As one student of the subject observed, the prime effect of the phrase for cause has been procedural. It puts the burden of proof on the employer for any corrective action prejudicial to the employee. In non-legal language, this means simply that the employer must prove that discipline is justified instead of the employee having to prove that it was arbitrary, inconsistent or unfair. The difference is important. It puts the employer or his representatives on trial with the employee presumed innocent until shown to be guilty. In the nature of things, the rule of burden of proof is not stated in the agreement between the company and the union, but it has become the fundamental rule of fair play to millions of employees working under union contracts in the United States. Similar conclusions can be drawn from experience with appeals requirements in public jurisdictions where there is a tendency to get enmeshed in excessive procedural formalities. This is in spite of the obvious truth that the purpose of procedure is to assure reasonable justice, not to provide an arena for adversaries to see who can best manipulate the requirements or outmaneuver each other. Some of the more recent merit system laws in state and local governments showed little sign of avoiding the traps of over-proceduralization. A few have gone so far as to make discipline almost impossible. The issue is not whether employees should have fair treatment, nor is it whether management should have a free hand. The more serious issue is what the effects will be on our social fabric and productivity. Trends in both private and public employment clearly demonstrate 1. A desirable awareness of the need for protection of workers in all employment against arbitrary or capricious discipline, but also 2. A danger that a protective philosophy is gaining such ascendancy that reward or condonement of incompetence and mediocrity is the result in many cases. Page number 31. A very delicate balance in values is at stake. Our civil rights heritage and sense of justice lead us to extend to the workplace the ideals we espouse in relationships between citizen and state or among citizens. Hence, we naturally think of parallel protections in the arena of employment, innocent until proved guilty, sufficiency of evidence, due notice and hearing, and similar hallowed concepts have come to be applied by workers who are protesting a dismissal, a demotion or other action adverse to their employment. This has its risks as well as its virtues. There is ample evidence that a civilization is on the decline when it loses discipline and goes soft. Many sincere and responsible people are concerned that we are too lenient with those who do shoddy work or no work at all. Such payroll leeches too often succeed in securing extraordinary protections and even the same rewards as those who produce well. It is much like the schoolboy who feels put upon when forced to meet high standards or when punished for laziness or misbehavior. Too often it is a teacher who gets the third degree by the overprotective parent. A productive civilization cannot survive in this kind of atmosphere. We must guard against an excessive concern for worker protection, that laxity and mediocrity come to be equated with integrity and superiority. A society founded on individual enterprise cannot long survive a dead leveling influence that gives a person a property right in employment with little or no obligation on his part to merit the rewards that go with it. Dedicated and competent employees get no incentive from conditions which condone and even protect poor performance or conduct. We cannot risk losing that incentive. The race should still go to the swift, the battle to the strong. There will be occasion in even the best administrative worlds when resort had to punitive measures. In the enforcement of discipline, the executive should enjoy authority commensurate with responsibility. Only a few basic legal provisions should limit his discretion and policies, which are safeguards against arbitrary procedure and against punishment without just cause being duly shown. Although it is desirable to provide for administrative review of the actions of supervisors, the final decision of an appointing authority should be subject to reversal on appeal only, where there has been a violation of fundamental principles and rights. Page number 32, Check Your Progress 3, question number 1, enumerate different types of disciplinary actions. Answer, see section 23.4. Question number 2, explain modes of disciplinary actions. Answer, see section 23.5. Question number 3, comment on safeguard versus protectionism arguments with reference to disciplinary actions in India. Answer, see section 23.7. Section 23.8, let us sum up. One cannot think of an organization working without discipline. Therefore, all organizations, more so the public service organizations, consider discipline as their central concern. Elaborate procedures have been evolved to see that the employees do not show leniency towards their work, nor do they shirk away from the responsibility entrusted to them. What any organization follows is what is called carrot and stick policy. Employees are both rewarded as well as punished in order to ensure smooth functioning of the organization. Government servants are subject to stringent disciplinary rules as they are paid by the public fund. But disciplinary action should not ignore the due process of law on the one hand and individual rights on the other. An officer should not be given an indiscreet power to take action against his subordinate. It would harm the interest of the organization more than it serves. One must always remember the axiom that discipline is for a cause. Page number 33, section 23.9, keywords. Tardiness means sluggishness. Reprimand means official reproof. Banishment means expulsion from one's own country. Patrolment means watch and ward duty. Pecuniary means relating to money. Turpitude means baseness. Tantamount means equivalent. Exoneration means free from blame. Section 23.10, some useful books. Personal Administration by Tyagi. Personal Administration in India by Bambury. Public Personal Administration by Stahl. Page number 34, blank page.